So this is Sandra Carroll interviewing Ed Case, who was a smoke jumper in 46, 47, 48 at McCall. This is July 21st, 1984, about 3:15.
Before I jumped?
Yeah, were you?
I worked in 44 summer as a fire guard at Cold Meadows. I was in the primitive area out of McCall in Payette National Forest. And, we worked on the airport, peeled poles, and fought fire. And we went to the Sheep Creek, did we say Sheep Creek Fire? No, I don't remember the name of the fire. We watched Chamberlain Basin, and then with Glenn Thompson, who was the fire chief on the force at the time. Met him at the fire. There were two jumpers that come in then, were the Quaker kids, the conscientious objectors. And they were on that fire. The fire blew up on them. One of them wound up way down over. It was on the Salmon River Breaks, and it was out of Chamberlain.
This is 1944?
This is 44.
44.
And I remember the first I knew of the jumpers were those two. One of them missed the mountain and went clear down into the canyon on the other side. They'd been there for a while. I don't know how long we were there, two or three days, and cleaned the fire up and then walked out to Chamberlain, walked back to Cold Meadows in Chamberlain, which was quite a little ways. I don't remember how far. 2 day walk. And that was that was the only fire I'd been on, I guess, before. And that's what got me a job as a smoke jumper. Because Glenn Thompson was fire chief, and he was, I guess, suitably impressed. And we could walk that far and still fight fire. I could do it later. Then I went, next year I was in the Navy, and war got over, and I wound up, applied for a job at McCall, and got it in, that would have been 46. Summer of 45, I was in the Navy. And I was an aviation cadet before that. We went back to McCall. And we trained in Missoula. And came up here. We were the first bunch of jumpers after the World War II. And we were the first bunch of McCall people trained. We were the first ones on the line in McCall.
How many of there were you?
I think there were 20 in the first group.
Do you remember any of the names?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Two of them were right here a minute ago. I got a whole list of them. There were, I filled this thing out.
That's so fine.
You've got
then if we have it somewhere.
They were all veterans. Most of them were ex-paratroopers. One of them that was here was an ex-Navy pilot. It was H. Nielsen. And he was the only ex-officer in the bunch and took quite a beating for that. We got back in. I've got some dates and I've got a diary here.
Oh.
I think I've got the diary. I'm not sure if maybe the diary's in the camper. But we got back in May or June, early June, and had I went on a fire in June, and the first fire we went on was with the paratroopers who had never fought fire, and that was very interesting. That was I didn't realize the work was quite that hard. And then on July 4th, we had a jumper was hit with a guy named Les was in, and he, the top came out of a tree at night. Hennessy and Paul Wild were there, and they were falling a snag that was burning in the top, and the top came out and hit Les, and I don't remember his last name, in the head. And we jumped in rescue the next day.
Oh, that was
John Ferguson and Kenny Roth was in that bunch, and I was one of them. I don't remember all of them. Guys. And one of the fellows was an ex-corpsman, and gave him plasma. And we carried him out, and he died the next day. That was before the guys had even got, the second group got back from Missoula. And I guess other high points that year, that was the busiest year I had. I made 17 fire jumps.
Do you remember this fire where you did the rescue, you know the name of that fire was?
I don't, no. I know it was the 3rd or 4th of July. 46. I made a jump on the James Creek fire and had a streamer. Main chute didn't open, and I broke the emergency and got. That was the first time that had happened.
What did that feel like?
It was pretty. Well, it wasn't so exciting when it happened because they'd done a good job of training us in Missoula. And what they told you was that if it strings out like that, to not to break your chest back until you're sure, you try to shake it out so on, and see if it open up. And I didn't really work too hard on the chest back until, on the thing until everything went just like it was supposed to. And so I finally decided, well, the little chute, if I'm going to have to open it because if the tangles with the big chute, it's just the way it's going to be. And I pulled it and decided I'd settle for a broken leg or something, and pulled it and then popped it, and the thing popped open, and then I get hit in a pile of brush just about not very damn long after that. Didn't hurt me a bit, and I still got the rip cord from the jump. I've got some neat pictures of it. I never even thought about it until this came out. There's the cords. I dropped it, but I found it on the ground. That was 21st August of 46.
Yeah.
There's the diary.
You might want to show, go back upstairs. Dale, who's the archivist, might want to take a look at some of your pictures, if
okay.
You don't mind.
I've got quite a... Yeah. I've got some interesting ones. That was... First jumps were out here at 9 Mile, weren't all that spectacular. The fourth, these guys may tell you, I was probably considered the luckiest guy of the whole bunch because two or three things that happened at Missoula on the fourth jump, and I really wasn't that organized. One of the guys walked across my canopy and then fell down through, this was Bruce Froman, and fell down through the shroud lines. And we were both hanging right here, you know, looking at each other, talking to each other, and you were supposed to take, you had a knife on your chest pack that you were supposed to take out and cut the lines that he looped around. And he looped around three, and I started to do that, and he says, no, don't wait a minute. I knew he was next parachute rear, so I said, wait a minute, see if I can swing out of here. And he swung back and forth two or three times and swung clear, and got clear out.
This was on a training jump?
That was a training jump. My fourth jump.
Did you? I mean, were both of you pretty calm about?
Yeah, it wasn't all that. We had been told what to do, and of course he was pretty calm because he jumped quite a bit before. And I think they did a good job of explaining to us what we were doing, and you know, we were prepared to do these things. That when they happened, it didn't. I didn't know enough to know it was really unusual. And, of course, the old war stories from all these ex-paratroopers, you know, they had these problems, guys walking on top of each other's chutes, and their chutes weren't steerable. They just jumped a low level, and they had jumps failures and so on. So I guess really didn't think it was that much of a
Big deal. Why did you? You said you were you worked for the Forest Service, and you saw some smoke jumpers in 44.
Yeah.
And you got? Did you get interested, or did you just get picked?
No, I was interested in it, and it was pretty. See, I was right at the end, tail end of World War II, and I wanted to be a carrier pilot. I just got started as an aviation cadet, and the war got over. And so, things just didn't go the way I was. You know, that was all glamour and flash, and we were young and eager. So I think that had the appeal of it. It was pretty spectacular and pretty impressive for the girls and that sort of stuff. You know. I did like the Force. I know, growing up, camped a lot and so on. And the summer in Tall Meadows was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun there. So it's hard work, but it was fun. Get out of the hot valley and down around Colorado.
So you were looking for the same kind of excitement and flash that you thought as a Navy pilot would be?
Yeah.
And since that didn't work out, you thought smoke jumping would fill the bill for you?
Well, that was... And it was a job, and it was a way to earn your way through school.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to college, and it paid really quite well.
So the three seasons that you jumped, that was your summer job for school to help you with school. And what were you doing in school?
Engineering. Mechanical engineering. Oregon State. And so when I got through school, I quit smoke jumping and went to earn an honest living, I guess.
Were most of the men who you were in your group in McCall at that time, were a lot of them fresh out of the armed forces?
All of them were.
All of them
Everybody
were.
Was.
How many were experienced with forestry stuff before?
Only two or three. Wilds lived in McCall, and they had grown up around it. Paul and Ralph Wild. And I think that, Wally Henderson was a son of a ranger. And I don't think any of the others had ever seen a fire or ever been in the woods. I know some of them, the big tough paratroopers, got scared of the dark. We walked up a hill one time with one that had been he was a medic, but we jumped some deer, he had these headlamps on, and you could see all these eyes over there running around, and this guy really got a little bit, concerned. But, deer at night, and big eyes, they really reflect a lot of light. I think the Forest Service moved away from, after that, the next two groups were mostly college students. They had to be veterans, I think, but they were most of them in college because the smoke jumper or the paratroopers were, they were a tough bunch. And it was local fights and basically trouble. And we had them here. We bailed one out of jail here in Missoula while we were training, or John Ferguson. Local law, McCall got to know several of them pretty well, and a couple of them had drinking problems. That didn't help, and they were just a little wild for the nice settled Forest Service, I think, to handle.
Do you think that they were in the same position you were, that they were looking for that same kind of excitement and stuff?
I think a lot of them had plenty. I know one guy had jumped on Corregidor. That was Hennessy. One had, this fellow that was afraid of the deer, had jumped at D-Day and was taken prisoner. Most of the guys were 101st or 82nd Airborne, and I think all of them had combat jumps. I'm almost sure all of them had combat jumps. And Ralph Wild, I know, was in the infantry. And he'd been run around by German tanks, according to him, anyway. So they had some real war stories. And, of course, I was the youngest kid in the bunch. And they laid it on me a little heavy, It was a very, very exciting and interesting time. I really, the second year, we got a lot of new guys in, and the first year was a spectacular year. And the third year I was in ROTC, went back to school, and I had a midshipman crew, so I only jumped about the last month, or month and a half of the season. I got back up late. But the thing is, I've known these guys were friends then, and they're just as good now, you know. Some of them I haven't seen for 30 years, over 30 years. But, and there was, let's see, from Caldwell, there was only two that I knew, jumped, myself and another fellow. Another one may have later, I don't remember. And we were also people we played football against in high school. Bus Burke, played opposite me on for Boise High School. I played guard and he played tackle. And Rod Davidson, who was from Boise, I was in the Navy with. He was at Butte with me in the Navy. It was kind of a small world, you know. It was different. It was near as many people. And at that time, all of them, the older men or the guys that were 20, 21, so on, were all in the service. So we were the kids that just ran wild for a little bit too.
Why do you think people like yourself chose to jump out of a plane?
Well, I don't think the jumping, I don't really know really why I did it. I wasn't afraid of it at all. And
do you remember your first jump?
Oh yeah. But
it was, remember what you felt like when you first jumped?
I remember it got very quiet, you know, when you got out of that old Ford tri-motor, and it got quiet, and it was, things moved pretty fast, and when the canopy got open, you know, I didn't really have any concept of what it would feel like. And we were just out there, and you saw the plane went left you real fast, and you got real quiet, real quick. And then you shoot, you do a pop, and your chute was open. You got a good jolt, and then there you were. You just big umbrella over you, and you pulled down on the lines to turn, and looked around. It was pretty. It really detached from everything when you're up that high. And the only time that I really got a little nervous was about the time you got about treetop height, and you got a feeling of height. I don't climb mountains, and, you know, I'm not one of these guys who climb mountains and that sort of thing. And I'm not particularly comfortable I've worked on high towers or something like that at times I had to go up. Not very particularly comfortable with it. And when you get to about that level, I could realize this was real, and that was the real ground down there. The trees were coming up, and so on. So, but I remember that fourth jump very much. The first jump, I don't really remember anything other than getting quiet, and I don't remember being particularly nervous going out. And I think probably that I didn't dare show it if I would have been, because I had all these paratroopers that were really laying it on, you know. Go ahead.
Do you remember your first fire jump?
Yeah, that was the one in May that I slid out of a tree. They told me that when you land, that you didn't have to worry about it when you hit a tree. That you didn't have to worry about when you came to a stop, because, you know, you had to make a letdown.
Do you know what fire this was? Do you remember what fire that was?
No.
Oh, that's all right. I'm just curious.
It would have been in June of 46, and been late June probably. I wasn't due to go back up on the list. So you had a rotating list, and I jumped, and then this rescue jump came up just a few days after that. but that was my second jump, I believe. Second operational time jump. But that one I hit in this big loose spruce and just sailed in nice and easy into the side of it. And they said if you once you hit, you're all right, then you can hit your stuff on your parachute and make a letdown. Well, I got up there, I moved a couple of times, and damned if I didn't slide right off the end of the limb. I just slid down like it was a slide. And I slid off the end and got out towards the end and it started falling through. And hell, I broke free. I went through the ground then, and I didn't hit very hard, but I did make a few remarks about the guys that said, once you hang up, you never have to worry about it. You're good. You're going to be there solid. But that one, I don't think I ever hung up where I had to make a letdown. I could always swing over the tree and crawl down or something like that. We had one guy hung 120 feet by a jumping partner in the top of a big tree up it was a big fir East Fork and the Middle Fork, on the Salmon. And I had to climb up the tree about 30 feet with a pair of climbers and tie my rope on, and then he made a let down to where my rope was, because he ran out of rope at that point. He strung his rope down, and we could measure and see where his was going to come to. And then I took the climbers and tied my rope off so that he could then get down.
Was he all right up there?
Oh, yeah. He was just a little bit concerned how the hell he was going to get to the ground.
Was he glad to see you?
Well, we were just the two of us. Oh. And, you find each other right away when you get on the ground. I'm trying to remember. It seemed like we went out one at a time. And then another guy came back, and one guy got on the ground, and then the other guy. And I was the first one down. And we had to cut the tree down to get the chute out. So we stepped it off, and it was 120 feet to where he was hanging. That was a long ways. It was on a kind of very steep side hill. And I could see, we could talk to each other. Could I go up the hill and talk out to him? But it wasn't any good way to get him down. I think that was Paul Claybaugh, I believe, if I remember.
Is there any other experiences, like on the fire line, once you got down there?
Well, the worst fire I was on was Sheep Creek. That was in 46. And we couldn't stop it. We got in there and it just kept going and going. We left McCall, you could see it from McCall. We got into several times into places that one time we went through the fire line. We found a spot that wasn't burned very much. But you just couldn't do anything with it. It just kept, it was just going, it was going to go. And I don't know how many. We had a lot of crew, jumpers came in from Missoula, and we had Mexicans came in, the crews from McCall. I remember one Mexican was killed on that fire. Walked off a cliff in the night.
When you say Mexicans, did they have a group of?
They were the farm labor.
Farm labor. Oh, they used them on fires?
Oh, yeah. They used them a lot.
Oh, I didn't. Did they have an actual crew, or did they just go around?
No, they had farm labor camps down in the valley. Down in Caldwell had one, and I don't know where they all came from. And they were Mexican nationals.
Uh-huh.
Most of them couldn't speak well. There was usually only one interpreter in with a bunch. And some of them had never been in the mountains, and it was a real circus to watch them. They'd try to cut a tree, they'd take the axe, and it wouldn't be any angle, they'd just go right straight at it. And they were hazarding themselves with some of these tools and so on, but they were pretty good workers, and they were very good about, they'd work if you'd work, but they wouldn't work unless you work. We had a couple of the Forest Service people that were leading some of the ground crew, and they'd lead the Mexicans. And Mexicans were pretty good. They didn't have to have you know, their food, they give them bread and canned tomatoes, as I remember, and they'd sleep right on the ground with their, they'd have blankets they had with them. And they would drop sleeping bags, but they didn't usually use them. And they're pretty easy. They were to bring them in trucks and hike them in.
Was this when they were particularly bad fires that they would bring them in for support groups?
Well, you had to have a help. They got everybody you could imagine. They got prisoners out of, they had prisoners out of the state prison that were of the...
like trustees?
Trustees. I never worked with any of them, but I know they
But they would use prisoners too?
And anybody they could get. There's a lot of manual labor involved in a big fire. And I don't know how big Sheep Creek was, but I think we were on at least a week. And they got it under control, I think, by that time when we got off. It burned a I've got some clippings on it. It burned a lot of grass. That was the most dangerous part of it, really. There's a lot more danger to fight fire than was jumping. And most of the injuries. We'd have leg and ankle injuries, and almost always the guys that got hurt were the first year guys. This guy that was, Lance Isidore, I remember, he got a line around Denver got hung one time. I wasn't there, but they were lucky to get him down. When you get a fire going, stuff rolling, and timber will burn, and then rocks will come loose, or logs will fall, and they'll roll down the hills. And if you're down the hill in front of them, that's kind of bad news. And then it can flare up and burn you up too, and it has, I guess. We never had anybody. We had a few guys with blisters or burns or something, but nothing very serious.
When you were like out for a week on this fire at Sheep Creek, were you were working with the ground crews?
They came in later, yeah. We were the first ones on.
You were there a week before they even got
no,
there?
No, we were there probably a day or 2 days before they could get to the fire. And then when they get to the fire, they've been climbing up mountains for the whole day and they didn't work much. And after about the fourth or fifth day, we get the fire where it was. Just running, we were do things like set up the kitchen. They'd drop in these kitchens and the food, and we'd sort this all out and get it organized because we knew how things went together.
Mm-hmm.
Where the people who were just pulled in off the street or Mexicans and so on, somebody had to see if they were fed and.
Water. So everybody, when you were out on a fire, whether you were a smoke jumper or a ground crew or the Mexican farm laborers or the prisoner, you were all communal?
I guess we were thought more of the, they didn't leave us on a fire too long when they got a heavy ground crew on because they needed us in other places. Yeah. But usually when we got, ground crew got in there, and if we could avoid mop-up work, we would. Any way, shape, or form. We got caught with it sometimes, but it's hot, hard, dirty work. And we get, once in a while, we had a Eager Beavers Boy Scout type one fire that kept giving us weather, getting us up and giving us weather reports in the middle of the night. And we didn't get clubbed. He'd obviously never been on a fire. And he was... working on the ranger station, one assistant ranger out of Southern California or something.
So what was it like afterwards, after you've been out there and you put all this energy and stuff into these fires? What was it like when you were all done?
Well, some of the hardest stuff was packing out. We used to have to carry our stuff out. There was no helicopter. And sometimes you'd get horses and pack spring, and sometimes you wouldn't. If you had to carry all your stuff, it was a pretty brutal load. It was about 70 pounds. And usually you'd try to work it out. They'd try to get the pack screen into you. And I don't think you really got tired or felt that bad. You know, you sleep, I don't remember. I remember being very, very tired coming out, but primarily from carrying a pack. So we had to carry a pack. And I remember at least once that we finally set them down and walked. We were about 200 yards below the road, and we couldn't get the packs up the road that night. So we, just all I could do to get that thing that far, and we piled them on the hill and then went on into camp and come on down the next day.
So then when you were on the fires, what kind of projects were you doing in McCall?
Oh, mowed the lawn. And the good projects were we get trail work or telephone line work. And those were usually early in the season when there wasn't any fires. But when the fires were, when they were on close call, they gave you all kinds of dirty little jobs around. Taking care of the garbage and cleaning up. You know, just general. Some of it was pretty, you know, just didn't like to do it all. A lot of it wasn't bad, but we did build the upper barracks. We moved CCC buildings in from out in the forest and built the upper barracks in McCall. That was the kitchen and where the second group of guys stayed. That was fun. Getting Dale Wild last night about he taught me how to build septic tanks.
So you didn't, like in 47, you were still doing 47, 48. Mm-hmm. Were those big fire seasons down there or?
46 was the worst. 47, 48. I made 17 jumps the first year. Fires, and I didn't make cat that many, I'm sure, but the second year. Of course, the third year was, I wasn't there the full season. I was there just about the last half of it. We had fires every year, and we didn't have a very big crew, but I understand the crews are a lot bigger now. I think it was 40 jumpers. I'm not sure of this. I think they took 10 of them to Idaho City. Smokey Stover took them to Idaho City. 10 or maybe 15, and then the balance were up there. But you just rotated on the jump list. When you came in, your name went on the bottom of the list, and you went to the top. And depending on the size of the fire and how many they were taken out, how fast you got to the top. And you had eight man when you were taking a load of. Like, you know, they clean the whole place out. On the Sheep Creek fire, everybody went. The two-man fires were more fun.
Why is that?
Well, you're out there like big camping trip. Wally Henderson and I wound up on the Seven Devils. That was the second or third year. And they dropped us in on top in September. It was early September. Probably the last fire of the year. And the fire wasn't big enough to worry about. It would have gone out by itself. It was about, you know, a good sized campfire when we got on it and some brush. And, you know, wasn't anything to putting it out. But then we were way ahead and going up on the back of Riggins on top of the hill. And it was cold. And the packer was supposed to come get us. We weren't supposed to walk out because the packer was going to come out of Riggins again. So we spent 2 or 3 days, I think it was 3 days up there. And you spent all day in your sleeping bag because it was so damn cold, and finally decided we ran out of food. We got hungry. and so we decided to walk out. We walked and we left our gear there. We were up too high to pack our gear out. We left our gear there, and we built great huge smudge, you know, a big fire. We thought maybe the packer couldn't find us, and they'd spot us, or they'd jump somebody else in on it, or they'd come look, see what the hell was going on. Well, they saw the smudge, but the packer couldn't get into us because of the way the cliffs were arranged. So we walked down, we had, I don't know, I'm very hungry, and I remember coming into a top of a canyon where it'd been an old farmhouse and an apple tree, and Wally went up the apple tree looking for apples, and kicked a little brown bear out of it. A little cucumber walked down the tree, took off. But we ate some old kind of half-rotten apples, walked back down the hill along a creek, and ran into some fishermen. And they asked us if we'd like some breakfast. And we didn't, I don't know why we didn't take it. I guess we just didn't feel comfortable about it. We got back out, and then Wally took the packer back up and got our gear. But the two-man fires were, a lot of times, two-man fires were easy. They were just a smoke, and they were easy to put out. And you were just on a camping expedition. Once in a while, they get too big to handle. Or they take four or six men. I've been on, but most of them are kind of fun, except sometimes you got a lot of exercise going in and out, especially out.
Was that the hardest part, going out?
I remember that when you're fighting fire, it's going, you know, it's moving. It's exciting, you know. You've got adrenaline flowing. I'm sure of that, and you don't get. I don't notice being tired. Didn't notice being tired then. Mm-hmm. You know, and we'd work some 12, 14 hours sometimes. You get them at night lots of times. You know, if you got them in the evening and you couldn't handle them in the day, you catch them. Got dark and getting dark and cooling off, and you can get them. And if you get them surrounded and to hold them, you about had it whipped. You know, usually if you got so something wasn't going to come across the line, or the wind didn't come up real bad on you. Probably the hardest fires were the big ones. The bigger they were, the harder work was fighting fire. And the smaller ones, the work was, I guess, coming out usually.
And so when you were back at your base, and you didn't have projects to do, what did you do with your free time, like your evenings? Or?
I shouldn't tell you. there was, remember who this group was.
Yes.
There was some pretty riotous behavior, and pretty much chasing the local girls.
So you go into town is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, McCall, we were right in town.
Oh, right.
McCall
was
a summer resort for the whole valley around there. So all the good-looking girls in the country came up there to the cabins or, you know, up there for vacations and so on. So there was that, and then there were a lot of local girls. And I guess it was girls and partying, you know. It was pretty well what took our time. There weren't many chess players. And really, you didn't have all that much the first year. There wasn't a lot of time. You know, you had time off in the evening. I don't think we went into town as much as it seems like now. You can remember that. You remember those times.
Well, when you were in school during the off season, what did your friends think about you being a smoke jumper in the summer?
Oh, it was, you know, big deal.
Oh yeah.
Big deal or a little crazy, you know. My wife was impressed at the time. She did a psychology paper on the smoke jumper. She did one, she interviewed him, and she didn't interview, she sent him a questionnaire. She knew two or three of them.
She was in school and this was?
Yeah, she was in school where I was, Oregon State. And she sent out questionnaires and got answers back about everybody in the question. I don't remember what they were, but I was asking her when we came up here if she still had that thing. And she may have it. She thinks it may be in Oregon somewhere with her stuff. But
that would be really interesting
thing to get another view of.
Well, if she could find that, I'm sure the archives would be really interested in a copy of.
I'll you know, we hadn't even thought about it till we got talking about these guys coming up. We were driving up, and I asked her, you know, I brought this stuff, and I said, what? Hey, whatever happened to that
thing you did? Do you know what year she did that?
Must have been probably the summer of 48, probably.
And she got a real good response? I mean, she all the points that she sent out, they sent back?
Yeah,
back?
Well, yeah, she sent them to the, well, there were guys that I jumped with. Right. They all knew me now. I don't know, don't remember. But there weren't very many of us, see. And I think she, I was asking, I think she got about 80-90% of them back.
That'd be real interesting, yes.
And I don't remember, I remember working on this paper. I'm sure the paper was written. I know that she wrote it. It wasn't a scholarly type thing. She was undergraduate at the time, sophomore.
Doesn't matter, still be interesting.
And it had to be 48. It had to have been summer or 47, 48 year probably.
What was it that impressed her about smoke jumping? Do you remember?
Well, she thought they were all crazy, you know. She, I don't know. Did I really don't. I couldn't tell you.
Did she worry about it?
I don't think so.
Did your male colleagues feel, did you think they felt envious of what you did in the summer?
Yeah, I think so. It was such a neat way to spend the summer, really. You know, even if it was, if you were working with the Forest Service someplace like this, it was a really neat way to spend the summer. And a lot of those guys, you know, they work in the fields or the bush cars or something like that. You know. No, that was, there's no doubt that that was prime job.
What did your family think of you?
Not very much. My mother was appalled at it. Well, of course, when I went in the Navy, she would be a pilot. That didn't set her up. And then when they had this, I'll have to show you this clip. It's, when I jumped on James Creek, they wrote a real neat article in the paper. If I find the silly thing. But anyway, I was missing. That's all that was in the paper.
Oh.
And my mother and my father were separated. But there it is. And they were all over the Forest Service, you know, like, where in the hell's going on, you know? Well, you know,
really?
That was when it did that. And that hit the Statesman, I guess. After I'd been back and on another fire, too.
Oh.
And so that wasn't, but really, you know, I was doing it, so she went along with it.
Do you think there were better ways for you to spend your summer?
Yeah, but she didn't have any good suggestions. So, and I was putting myself pretty well through school that way. And between that and my GI Bill, not really good.
Would the Forest Service allow you so that your time would be, so you could get back to school on time and get out of school? Were they real lenient about giving you the time?
There was
to do
a
that?
Whole bunch of us that did that. Oh. And September, the fire season was pretty well over. And you could leave. They arranged when you come out right after school, they tell you what week to report, and then it was all set up for no problem at all. I never had a big problem with that. A lot of the guys that I worked with, that first bunch, most of them didn't go to school. A lot of them wanted to stay on during the winter, and they only took a few of them. Didn't have enough work for them. They patched parachutes and did those other sort of things. And then, of course, it was always the married men that got the ones that were married got to stay on and got the good jobs, too. Some of the, although the ones that did stay were real good people, like Wayne Webb and Del Catlin, Smokey Stover, Peterson. I don't think Pepperlake was married at that time, but the other Peterson in the bunch was married. They made foremen and spotters out of those guys fast.
What about any of the pilots? Did you know any of the pilots that flew you?
Fogg, Bob Fogg, flew us most of the time. I knew him. Didn't know him real well, but...
Was he in the service before he...
I don't know. I don't think so. I think he was with Johnson here in Missoula.
Oh, before. The Johnson brothers?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think he'd been flying in the brush type plane pilots, mm-hmm. you know, for years. And, very careful. You felt very comfortable with him. They weren't reckless, any of those guys. They were very, you know, I've seen them say, no, we're not going to fly today. We're not going in there today. Some of the backcountry strips, they would only go in and out in the morning and then late at night. You know, just about dark. But he's the only one I remember. I even remember we used to buggy. We could reach out of the window on the trimotor, and the control cables came back on the outside of the plane, that big bell crank. And you could jerk the cable, and it bumped the rudder or the elevators. He'd be flying along there real peaceful, and he'd reach out and jerk that thing, and the damn airplane would lurch. He'd turn around and snarl at you. You know, he'd look for a minute. You know, you'd really wake him up. He'd look for a minute, then he'd turn around and snarl at you. Knock it off. Those old planes were something, those trimotors. I never jumped out of anything. I jumped once out of a DC-3 and the Travelers and others, but and the DC-3s were so hot. The trimotor is just like walking off a ledge. You know, it was so slow. They were nice. And they'd go in and out of fields. And you couldn't get these big planes out.
Which planes did you prefer jumping at?
The trimotor.
The trimotor?
Yeah.
You said earlier in the beginning that you hadn't seen some of these guys in 30 years and you see them now and they feel just like old friends.
Uh-huh.
What is it about smoke jumping that does that?
Oh, I suspect that there's a group probably forms like that under any kind of a stress situation. I've seen it in the Navy to a degree. I went back during the Korean thing, and the officers on the ship got kind of that same sort of a, you live with them, and weren't any real big hazards, but you live with them, drank with them, knew their families, and were dependent on them. Each were dependent upon each other for doing their job and doing it right. And I think that's part of this thing. I think this was the same sort of deal. Because, you know, you were pretty dependent on these other guys lots of times, to do, especially if they're packing your parachutes.
Yes. Is it trust then?
It's trust. It's trust and confidence in the other guy's abilities. And I guess that's the same thing, really. I think a trust and a certain common purpose or something. You got the same, you're doing the same thing, you're trying to get the same thing done, and some of that nature, I'm not just sure.
Do you think that any of your friendships outside of smoke jumpers have the same qualities to them?
Oh yeah, they have sense. I think there was probably a mixture of types of individuals in the smoke jumpers. I'm an engineer, and I'm by nature engineers are snobs because they only talk to other engineers. So that's where, you know, most of my friends are or else they're friends of my wives, and then that's where most of our friends are now. And at that time, this was a real cross section. Kids like myself and some old guys that well, they were over there 24, 25, that had been through a lot of combat, and some of them had been through some pretty tough experiences. Some of them, one guy, Axelson, was scarred. He'd been a German prisoner for a long time, and he would always carry food. Nobody else would carry food, but he would always have food, and he would always, he'd be nibbling. Not because he was particularly hungry, I think it was a security blanket, his food was. He claimed it was because he just didn't get anything to eat for a long time. He got kidding about it. There was a wide variety of backgrounds, education, and intelligence. Some of them were smart. There were some smart kids there, and there were some that weren't all that bright. But they all were, we were all a team. We all worked together. If there was a big flap in McCall, if somebody got into a bar, got in trouble, wound up in jail, we somehow arranged to take care of him, get him home, that sort of thing.
So you think it's that common goal, that common purpose, that made it so easy for you to form these bonds with all these different people that perhaps if you hadn't been a smoke jumper with them, you wouldn't have been friends?
I wouldn't have, I'm sure of that. I'm sure that I wouldn't have. That they were not the kind of people that would have sought each other out as friends, necessarily. They wouldn't have probably even, just by nature, have been in a position where they would have been exposed to each other. And I suppose that there's something common about all of us. Common speaking. I'm silly enough to jump out of airplanes.
Wow. So is there anything else that you'd like? Any other stories or anything else about your whole experience that...
No, I...
It seems to me that you thought a lot about this on talking to your wife on the way down here again.
Yeah.
Filling
that form out made me stop and go back and think and do a little backgrounding on when some of these things occurred. But you don't remember that sort of stuff went off. But I think that one thing I've always been really impressed with the Forest Service. The federal government's got a lot of screw-up agencies, and the Forest Service has some fringes sometimes that are a little bit squirrely, but generally, they have such good people. And,
Wait a minute. Okay. I didn't see that little light, so I wasn't sure that battery was still going.
In Ogden, if you go to... They got a map room. Go and get a map of your... If you're at 5 minutes till five, no problem. They'll fiddle around till 15 after. And these are just the clerical people in the office. You go to Hillfield, 20 minutes to cutting time, they won't talk to you. And it's an attitude. And we have several friends that are friends in Ogden because there's a lot of Forest Service people in Ogden. They're just really nice people. One of them was the fire control man down there for a long time. John Ferguson, of course, is my boss, is down there. But the Forest Service, I think, has got a good thing. They've done a good job as a government agency. They've done a good job with getting the right kind of people and a good public. Good public image, and they've got a lot of dedicated people. I know they stand in line to get the jobs, the good ones. That's maybe the reason.
So, how would you summarize your three seasons with the Forest Service?
It was a lot of fun.
Was it?
It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. It probably got me over a lot of the frustration that I had for not getting, when you're young and I want to go out and do things like that. I did them. I did a lot of them.
So, when you think about it, you think about what a good time you have. You don't think about the hard work or...
No, I don't hardly remember. I can remember being very, very tired. But I don't remember. I can remember just the funny things that happened to guys lots of times. Some of the silly things that they did. And there's always a continuous ribbing of one guy for this thing or for that thing. You know, everybody had their soft spot, I guess. But well, I guess that would be better. I think
just had a good time.
I had a good time. I enjoyed it. It was a very memorable part of my life. But it's, you know, I wouldn't make a career of it. It was a good way. It was sure a nice way to go through, to, you know, going to school and studying art for 9 months. Then you go back, and this is, as far as, this is like, you know, taking a break from normal recreation. I go play tennis now and I get frustrated. Something like I beat it out, I beat the ball again. And this was the kind of thing that give you a break in the summertime when you're going to school. It really was a break, and you're ready to go back when you went back.
So you saw it as a release for stress and tension of being in school all year?
I think so.
So the way to work it out was to jump out of it?
Okay, Ed, what do you think about women smoke jumpers?
Well, at that time, they couldn't have functioned at all. No way.
Why do you think that?
They'd never been accepted. The veterans wouldn't have taken them. They wouldn't have allowed them in the fire. They wouldn't have women's work.
Oh, you think it was just bureaucracy that would have kept them out?
No, it was individual people's opinions. It's like when first women tried to go in a coal mine or something. They just wouldn't have them. It's not a place for a lady on the fire.
Okay, but do you think women would not have been capable of it in 1946?
Oh, no, I know. Sure they could. Okay. I know that.
Okay.
I'm not a chauvinist completely. I couldn't have three daughters and do one. But I've had certain tendencies at one time. Girls now would have no problem. It's pretty physical. I know I've got all my friends' daughters. Geologist. She goes out with geo crews. She's the only girl out in the mountains and in and out with helicopters and everything else. Her father's a little uneasy about this, but you get over that sort of thing, you let them live their own lives.
Right.